she laughed and said she wanted to go down the rabbit hole. She wanted to see where he'd gone. She woke up again when I took her hand. And didn't remember? Eve prompted. No. She was baffled and a little embarrassed. It happened one more time about 2 weeks ago. I woke up, and she was sitting on the side of the bed staring at me. I asked her what was wrong. She said, it was like a riddle. She said, why is a crow like a desk, I think? A raven? Louise asked. Why is a raven like a writing desk? Yeah, that's it, a raven. It's from Alice in Wonderland, the book. And the riddle has no answer. The rabbit hole, that's an Alice reference, too. And the tea party could be the Mad Hatter's tea party. Was she a big fan of that story? Eve wondered. I don't know, Henry told her. Not that I know of, especially. Maybe it's something she read as a kid, or her parents read to her. So it reminded her of when they were alive, when everyone was safe. I don't know. All right. A question for Mira, Eve supposed, the department's head shrink. We'll get back to you, she said as she rose. Isn't there something I can do? We'll go be with the family, Louise told Henry. In a little while, we'll go be with the family. I'll walk you out, she said to Eve and Peabody. Eve waited until they were out of Henry's earshot. There were sedatives and hallucinogens in her system. A bunch of long, complicated names, and some elements we have to wait for the lab to ID. Being as you're a doctor, I'm telling you, I'll clear you to talk to Morris and Berensky if you think you can be of any help putting that part together. She might have taken a sedative, but I can promise you, she wouldn't have taken a hallucinogen, not knowingly. The sleepwalking? 3 incidents Henry knows of, which doesn't mean there weren't others when he didn't wake up. That's a concern. As is the money, and the fact she hid all those cards from Henry, didn't tell Marcus. She didn't tell him, or he'd have told me when he asked us to come over, possibly talk with her. She gripped Eve's hand, then Peabody's. Someone manipulated her, fed her drugs, caused her to kill Marcus and herself. Why? Find out what she ingested. Leave the rest to us. Chapter 7 Considering the herbs and sleep aids, Eve made the psychic nutritionist the first stop. Dr. Hester housed her business in a street-level shop in Soho. Tucked between a health food store and a bakery. She'd go for the bakery every time. The reception retail area held shelves full of apothecary-style bottles, instructional and motivational discs, candles, and crystals. The girl at the counter sported multiple visible piercings, ears, eyebrow, nose, and a tat of a winged dragon on the back of her right hand. "A bright and healthy morning," she said, each syllable heavily weighted with the Bronx. What service can we provide for you? We're looking for Dr. Hester. Dr. Hester is preparing for a consultation. If you'd like to book... Eve pulled out her badge, held it up. We're fully licensed in accordance with all city, state, and federal laws. That's not my worry right now. Get your boss. Hang a minute. She slid off the stool and went through a door behind the counter area. Eve watched Peabody ease over toward a section of metabolism boosters. Don't even think about it. Easy for you, when your metabolism runs like a rabbit and mine's a slug-on zoner. Besides, they're all natural products. Nature's a vicious bitch. A woman came out. Short, lavender hair that matched her eyes, a deep purple dress that flowed to her knees. Her data listed her at 50, Eve recalled, but the perfect, unlined skin carved 10 away. What can I do to help you? What can you tell me about Darlene Fitzwilliams? Ah, A tragedy. I heard a media report. You're looking for answers. Seeking death is rarely an answer. Was she a client? I don't remember her. She had your business card, a pamphlet, and a bottle of your natural rest. I see. Cassiopeia, would you check, please? Cassiopeia settled on the stool again, swiveled to her counter comp. Darlene Fitzwilliams, 50-minute introductory consult, August 3 of last year. No follow-up on record. Would you pull my notes on that? Hester gave Eve a quiet smile. A single consult. It's difficult to remember the details. I figured you'd intuit that sort of thing. The smile never wavered. My gift is one that intuits, as you say, the inner person. Such as... She turned to Peabody. You shouldn't worry so much about your weight. Good nutrition, regular exercise, of course, but you have a very healthy, robust body. Your perception of your body is harsher than the reality.
Really?
Natural metabolic boosters, such as Chen Pai, Shen Jiang, Ru Gi, can be helpful. But you're young, healthy, and active. It's the sweet tooth, she added with a knowing smile, that challenges you. Your notes! Cassiopeia offered Hester a handheld. Thank you. Oh, yes. So sad, she murmured as she read. The loss of her parents, so sudden and tragic. She wasn't sleeping or eating well, all that stress and grief. I did recommend a sleep aid and a nutrition plan, and suggested additional sessions to work on emotional healing and acceptance, but... Hester lowered the handheld. I remember her now. She wanted to contact her parents. Her dead parents. I understand the skepticism. Contact with those who have moved on in the cycle is not my gift. Your pamphlet says otherwise. Hester shook her head. I can assist. And there are certain herbs and practices that can open and enhance the gift if one has its root. I didn't sense that root in her. And couldn't ethically encourage her. She took the aid and the plan, but didn't contact me again. She came in a couple more times, Cassiopeia said. I checked for you. She bought more natural rest in October and again in December. She purchased some candles and some bath salts. I wish I could have given her more, but I didn't have the answers she looked for. I'm afraid I don't have the ones you seek either. Anything in here that causes hallucinations? I don't traffic in hallucinogens, even natural ones. I believe reality is to be embraced. The natural rest stuff. Could it cause them in combination with other herbs? I would have given her a list of herbs, foods, medications to avoid while taking the product. I wouldn't have recommended it if she had been a proponent of altered reality substances. She was clean, Lieutenant, as both of you are. If you can tell that by looking, we could use you in illegals testing. That's not my path. I hope you find the answers you need on yours. She seemed pretty straight, Peabody commented when they walked out. For a psychic nutritionalist... No buzz, anyway, but we'll see what the lab says about the sleep aid. Meanwhile, we've got a couple more right in this area, then one in the East Village. And I want to talk to the lawyer. See if you can get her to come in. Save us a trip uptown. They interviewed three psychics, waking up one who claimed to commune only with spirits between the hours of midnight and 5 a.m. Nothing there. Eve got back in the car, aimed it toward Cop Central.
The second one we talked to, Mikhail Lombrowski, he was the real deal. The others, maybe they had something, but mostly they were looking to score. He was genuine.
Why him?
My dad's a sensitive,
and he kind of reminded me of my father. He wanted to help her. That's what came through for me, but he couldn't give her what she wanted, so, like she did with Hester, she cherry-picked and moved on.
I tend to agree. It's also telling that she went to all of these before she started making those weekly withdrawals. We need to find the one she settled on.
As she pulled into Central's garage, Peabody glanced at her signaling Link.
Huh. The lawyer's on her way in. We don't get that kind of result often.
Set us up a conference room and give Dickhead a goose on the talks.
You want me to goose Dickhead?
Eve thought of the chief lab tech. It'll throw him off coming from you instead of me. Maybe we'll get happy results there, too.
She needed to set up the board and book in her office, write everything up.
And if she didn't have the tox results within an hour, she'd personally go to the lab and sit on Dick Berensky's egg-shaped head until he produced.
She turned into homicide, noted all her detectives and cops were present.
Is there no crime today?
Baxter, feet on his desk, a Link at his ear, grinned at her.
Tying one up now, LT. The asshole Trueheart and I took down bright and early this morning's down in booking.
She glanced at Trueheart, who'd soon be ceremoniously awarded his gold detective shield. Obviously, Baxter had dumped the paperwork on his partner.
She glanced across the bullpen to where Santiago sat morosely under a big black cowboy hat with a shiny silver band.
How much longer do you have to wear that?
A bet's a bet.
Behind him, Carmichael smiled smugly.
And he lost. I went double or nothing with her. It's a sickness.
She decided not to comment on Jenkinson's tie, because it looked like an explosion of radioactive waste. Instead, she escaped to her office, set up her board. Armed with coffee, she sat at her desk and wrote everything up in detail, adding a query to Mira. Then, with more coffee, she put her boots on the desk, her eyes on the board, and let her brain play with theories. And, still thinking, she pulled up an incoming from Morris.
Dallas, she held up a finger to hold Peabody off, finished reading. Morris found traces of peyote, cannabis, fencyclidine, and mint inside the female Vic's nasal passages, sinuses.
She inhaled it?
Inhaled this, he believes, in vapor form. Ingested more in liquid form.
What about the lab?
Berensky says he'll have the final when he has it. Then I played the innocent underling card. Said how you were all over my ass. Complimented that weird facial hair he's been growing lately. He said to give it another 20.
Good job. If she wasn't taking this crap voluntarily, somebody was doing a hell of a number on her. Morris confirms, even without the elements we haven't nailed down, she'd have been in a euphoric and altered state.
Maybe she didn't know what she was inhaling and ingesting. Or maybe whoever mixed all this up told her it was what she needed to communicate with her parents.
Either way, whoever gave it to her is responsible for two deaths.
Her lawyer's here. The family lawyer, I mean. I had her taken into the conference room.
Let's go dig out who stood to gain.
Gia Gregg sat ramrod straight at the conference table, talking on an earlink. She gave Eve a nod and continued her conversation. She wore a black suit, sharp as a scalpel, and her hair in a dark crown of tight curls with shimmering red highlights. It suited her coffee regular skin and her cool green eyes. She completed her conversation, then removed the earlink and slipped it into a pocket of her jacket.
I'm sorry. It's a difficult and busy morning.
We appreciate you coming in.
Sean Fitzwilliams has arrived in New York. I spoke with him before I came in, and he instructed me to give you my full cooperation. The family is understandably devastated. And they want answers, Lieutenant, Detective, because no one who knew Darlene believes she did what the media is gleefully claiming. She took out a notebook, set it on the table. I intend to take careful notes of our conversation, as I and my clients also want answers. Have you any leads? Our investigation is active and ongoing. Eve sat, took the lawyer's measure. A solid rep, Rourke had told her, and he would know. Her own research indicated Gia Gregg had represented the rich and richer with a steady hand for more than 3 decades. At approximately 8:30 last evening, Darlene Fitzwilliams entered her brother's apartment. Within minutes, she stabbed him 3 times in the chest with a pair of 9-inch shears and immediately walked out to the apartment's terrace and jumped to her death. I don't believe that. It's fact. However, she added before Gia could protest, our investigation leads us to believe Miss Fitzwilliams was under the influence of a hallucinogenic cocktail. Darlene, Miss Fitzwilliams did not use. In fact, part of her work in the Fitzwilliams Foundation supported rehabilitation and education centers for illegals abuse. The final toxicology report is still forthcoming. However, the preliminary has already identified several substances in her system, including valerian, diazepam, peyote, phencyclidine, and cannabis. Greg's eyes widened at the length of the list. Then someone dosed her without her knowledge or consent. That may be. If she consented, it's highly probable she did so in the belief the substances would aid her in communicating with her parents. Were you aware she'd been seeking the help of psychics and mediums for that purpose? Not until this morning. I've also spoken with Henry, her fiancé. He told me what you found in her closet and about the bank account, the withdrawals. Someone used her grief. Someone did this to her and Marcus. At this point, with the evidence we have, I agree with you. Gia's shoulders relaxed for an instant. We need to issue a media release. Darlene's reputation is being... We're not going to do that. Her reputation isn't my concern. Finding whoever provided her with illegals, whoever convinced her to take them, or gave them to her without her consent, is. Who stands to gain by their deaths? Both Darlene and Marcus leave a considerable estate in their own rights, and have numerous beneficiaries. The foundation itself would be the largest for both. Who gets the biggest piece of the pie? Before their parents' death, we had a meeting. The 4 of them, regarding updating their estate plans, beneficiaries. Darlene chose to leave $10 million to Henry on the event of her death, as well as her share of the home they purchased. Funny, he didn't mention that. He doesn't know. Darlene was also firm on that stipulation. He's a proud man. He was raised by a single mother who worked very hard to support him and his sister. He was able to go to college and grad school because of her hard work and his own. Scholarships, interning. He made his own. And you can trust that when it became apparent he and Darlene were serious, her parents did a thorough background check on him. Gia sighed. He's a good man. I'm very fond of him myself. He loved her. The money? It didn't play a part for him. In fact, it was an obstacle initially. I'm also aware he works for your husband, who would also have done a thorough background on him. Henry wouldn't work for Rourke in such a key position if he weren't ethical and clean. She had a lot more than the 10. Yes. There are individual bequests to family members, most sentimental rather than monetary. Marcus, for instance, left Darlene his apartment. There's a difficult area here, as he predeceased her. By a couple minutes. By seconds would amount to the same, legally. He left most of his property to her, so, though I will study on this, It appears this will flow into her estate. As I said, the bulk goes to the Foundation and to individual organizations the Foundation supports. Darlene earmarks several for single bequests or for continuing grants. She took a disc from her bag, offered it. I have a list for you, though I can't see how it applies. Darlene researched and investigated all grant requests. She, Marcus, Sean, and two other Foundation officers would then review and vote on the grants. They, these officers, staff, draw a salary? Yes. Who runs the show now? Sean would be acting president and acting CEO of the business. I can also tell you these aren't positions he wants. He and his wife are well settled in Europe. His youngest child is in school there. His oldest, with his first wife, lives minutes away with his own wife and children. The loss of Darlene and Marcus is shattering, and so close to the loss of Gareth and Bria. It's going to take time and work to restructure the positions, the responsibilities. Best guess? They'll try to keep it in the family. I would recommend they divide both Marcus's and Darlene's positions. Several candidates stand out, but none of them would kill for the job. People kill for all sorts of reasons, Eve said. Maybe one of them told her about a medium, guided her to where they wanted her to go. Who was she close to? Who would she tell when she decided to go this route? Marcus, and obviously he didn't know. Henry, the same. And Louise D'Amato, whom I know you're aware was a close family friend. Darlene had other friends, of course, but those three were her Foundation. If she told none of them, she told no one. I wish she had. I wish she'd talked to me. We had a good personal relationship. Tears swam into her eyes, and she paused for a moment until she'd controlled them. If she'd come to me, I might have been able to help her. I could have used my resources to find her the right person, someone gentle and kind as well as gifted, so she could talk to her dead parents. While I may be a bone-deep skeptic on such matters, I discount nothing. But I know this. If she'd been able to reach them, they'd have told her to move on with her life, and they'd never have suggested she use drugs. So I have to conclude she didn't reach them. We're gonna agree on that. The family requested I ask when they can have Marcus and Darlene. We'll release the bodies as soon as we can. Sean, particularly, would like to see them. Henry, he needs to see Darlene. No, he doesn't. Eve gentled her tone just a little. No one needs to see Darlene as she is now. Trust me on that. They'll insist. Let me talk to the ME. See if anything can be done to minimize the damage. That's very kind of you, and much appreciated. You're going to be with the family. If you get any sense, hear anything that leads you to believe someone played a part, I want to hear it. You can depend on it. I won't, but I also won't withhold any information that pertains to their deaths. They mattered to me, Lieutenant, as much more than clients. Chapter 8. Obviously, complimenting Dickhead's excuse for a goatee worked, as Eve had his report in her inbox when she returned to her office. The minute she read it, she sent a copy to Mira, then headed out. "Dallas?" Peabody called from her desk. "Are we back in the field? I need Mira first. Work out the best route to hitting the rest of the psychic list. I'll be back in 10. She had to get through Mira's snarly admin, but she needed answers. Louise was an option, she thought as she jumped in an elevator, despite the crowd inside. She'd given Louise the data, mostly to keep her busy, but she'd be a good source. Still, she was strictly medical, and Mira was both a medical and a head doctor, and a superior profiler. By the time she made it to Mira's office, she was ready to attack. It came as a slight letdown to see the admin's desk unoccupied and Mira's office door open.
"Did someone slay the dragon?"
Mira glanced over.
"She's still at lunch. I've only gotten back myself now. Your toxicology report,
have you read it?"
"I just reviewed it. Sit."
"No, I'm revved up. Need to get back in the field. That combination insider, inhaled, ingested, that's extreme."
"Yes, even in these minute amounts, and particularly when combined with regular use of this sleep aid. The aid itself is perfectly harmless and potentially beneficial, but no sensitive, no legitimate one would combine these other substances, even not knowing the client was taking a valerian-based holistic.
She'd hallucinate."
"She would have been very susceptible to hallucinations, yes." "I'm having tea."
"No, please. I mean, go ahead, but I don't have time for it."
In sapphire blue heels to complement her winter white suit, Mira ordered tea from her auto chef. Not only would she have experienced an altered state, a sensation of extreme well-being, but a kind of spatial confusion. I'm surprised she was able to navigate to her brother's apartment. The doorman said she walked to the building. Maybe whoever gave her this crap transported her close to the building.
I don't believe she could have driven herself in this state. Eve, I've never seen this combination of drugs, herbal and chemical. But with some of the derivatives sometimes used to aid in hypnosis, to relax the patient, help open them to suggestion. Some practitioners use small doses to aid in weight loss, rehabilitation of substance abuse, even anger management. But this combination?
Mira took a sip of tea from one of her delicate china cups.
I would want to do a full analysis myself, but I believe this would have left her open to post-suggestions with hallucinations and altered perceptions. The addition of fencyclidine?
Eve wasn't a chemistry whiz, but she was a cop. That's the base element for Zeus.
Yes, and while this amount and combination isn't Zeus, it could cause someone to harm themselves, to burn themselves, even set fire to a building, mistaking a flame for a flower, for instance, or cut themselves, believing a knife was a bar of soap. To fall, seeing a drop off a building as a set of stairs.
She stabbed her brother 3 times. She might have thought she was giving him a love tap. She fell 52 floors, maybe thinking she'd sprout wings and fly.
This fit, Eve thought. This worked for her, both brain and gut. We may never know, but it's pretty damn clear somebody fucked her up. And if she needed help getting to her brother's place, they wanted him dead, too. Nodding, Mira brushed back a curve of rich brown hair.
Look for someone who's skilled. This combination took time and practice to perfect. Someone also gifted. It's very likely they are indeed a sensitive, as they read this victim very well. They also gained her trust, and I would say gained it quickly. It's most likely a male. She would see a male as authoritative, experienced, probably between 40 and 60. He's experienced, he's studied, and she wouldn't have been as susceptible to a younger man.
Mrs. Father. Depends on older brother.
Yes. Your killer is a sociopath who exploits his own gift. He's organized and intelligent and enjoys having control over others and looks for gain. He likes to live well. He may also be a psychopath, finding pleasure in causing death, yet he has no direct hand in the killing.
I found pieces of what the labs confirmed was a lapel recorder near her body. Ah. Mira nodded again. No direct hand in the killing, but a desire to watch. To kill, essentially, without being there or getting his hands bloody. He's unlikely a physical sort. A manipulator. She was sleepwalking. Mira frowned over her tea. The sleep aid should have prevented that. The three times her fiancé found her at it, she was doing or saying weird things. Pouring tea for a party, down in the kitchen. Crawling under the bed, saying she needed to go down the rabbit hole. Sitting on the bed, waking him up with a riddle about a raven and a writing desk. Alice in Wonderland. That's what Louise said. Interesting. Mira sat back in her blue scoop chair, sipped more tea. A sort of test, I'd think. Laying a base for the post-hypnotic suggestions. An interesting choice. A kind of surreal story filled with a young girl's bizarre adventures. Some interpret it as drug-based. The hookah-smoking caterpillar, the mushrooms that cause Alice to grow and so on. He may be an addict himself. A combination of psychic abilities and hallucinogens would give him a heady sense of power. He kills, or rather causes another to kill, because he can, and because it gives him a sense of power. Watches from his client's point of view. That gives him a front row seat. Yes, and Alice again. Perhaps delight. A childish delight in watching the murder and suicide he's manipulated. He's probably done it before. It worked so seamlessly, really. It's difficult to believe this was his first. Then I'd better find him before he sets the next one up. Heading back, she switched from elevator to glide, moving briskly, and spotted Rourke the minute she turned into homicide. He sat on the corner of Jenkinson's desk, holding a conversation that had her detective grinning. When he saw her, he rose, strolled over. "Lieutenant, are you here to report a crime?" "No. I had a meeting nearby and took a chance my wife might be about. And here she is. Not for long." But she considered her options. "How much time do you have?" "That would depend. If you've got an hour, maybe two, I'd split Darlene's list with Peabody. Then I've got an hour, maybe two." "Good. Hold on a minute." She stepped over to Peabody's desk. "See if Feeney can spare McNabb. If so, take him with you and check out the last half of Darlene's list. If McNabb can't do it, take Uniform Carmichael. Rourke and I will work on the first half." "Sure, I'll tag him now." "McNabb or Carmichael, Peabody? Good eyes with experience. We're looking for a sociopath with at least some psychic abilities, one who may be an addict. An interest or obsession with Alice in Wonderland is likely, so look for any sign of that. Psychopathic pathology is also very probable." "Solid backup, because he could try to put the whammy on me." "Solid backup." Eve left it at that, turned away, and noted that Rourke must have slipped into her office and back as he held her coat. "Thanks. Report after every meet," she told Peabody, and strode out, swinging on the coat as she walked. "You probably know more about this Alice in Wonderland stuff than I do." "I know the story," Rourke said. "I've read the books and seen a variety of vid interpretations. Like I said, you know more than I, so you'll be handy. The person we're after likely knows a lot about it, too. You might catch something I'd miss. Such as a White Rabbit or Mad Hatter?" "If you say so." "I'll drive," she said when they reached the garage. "You don't know the story?" he asked her. Her childhood hadn't been prone to bedtime stories. Then again, she thought, neither had Rourke's.
Some kid falls down a rabbit hole, which makes no sense, because rabbits are a lot smaller than kids. Weird stuff happens.
It's considerably more entertaining than that. Though it was written as a children's story, it has fascinating symbolism, intrigue, social commentary. Whatever it's got, somebody who may have psychic abilities and certainly has access to a knowledge of hallucinogens is using that knowledge and those possible abilities to kill. And at least with Darlene Fitzwilliams, some of this Alice stuff played in.
It's unlikely she was the first, Eve continued as she navigated traffic, but I can't run like crimes. I can't know if it's a murder-suicide trend. Just murder, just suicide. Or maybe ruled accidental when somebody walked in front of a maxi bus because they thought they were chasing that white rabbit thing.
People will ruin everything, won't they? A beloved story becomes twisted to kill.
Something strikes you Alice-like, let me know. Unwilling to take the time to hunt up street parking, she pulled into a lot. There's two within walking distance. They got nothing from either, then backtracked to the parking lot. Eve headed across town to the East Village.
It strikes me how much of your day is routinely spent doing this, talking to people who turn out to have no connection to your case or who may give you another line to tug. That's why they call it a job. This next one goes by the name of Madame Dupre. She even had her name changed legally. But she started out as Evelyn Bassett, born in Yonkers 54 years ago. Some 25 years back, she had a pretty thriving business. This time, Eve hit on a street spot and zipped into it at an angle and speed that had Rourke's eyebrows lifting. Had a rep, had a screen show, made a bunch of money, and lost it all when her husband-slash-business manager ran off with her assistant. He'd also gotten her to sign over the bulk of her earnings along the way so he could, legally, if not ethically, walk away with the dough.
I imagine her reputation suffered.
You got that?
Eve stepped onto the sidewalk with him, gestured north. Who wants to shell out for a psychic who doesn't know her spouse is screwing around on the side and who's going to end up leaving her broke? Part of her thing was connecting people with dead loved ones. Eve stopped in front of her Ukrainian restaurant, nodded at the sign on a skinny doorway. Now she runs her shtick out of a second-floor apartment over this place. Eve pressed the buzzer, mildly surprised when it buzzed back seconds later to unlock the narrow door. The thing is, she said as they went into a dim stairwell, she's clean. No criminal, no litigations I could find. In fact, she worked with cops numerous times in her heyday, specialized in finding missing kids. The reports claim she was instrumental in locating a number of them. So I figure, if Darlene did her due diligence, this is one she would have come to. The entrance to apartment 200 boasted a bold red door and a brass knocker in the shape of a dragon. Eve took the dragon by the tail and knocked. The door opened. The name had given Eve an image of turbans and colorful scarves, but Madame Dupre stood about 5'5" in a simple dress as boldly red as the door, with her dark curling hair loose and unstyled. A number of large and glittery rings adorned her fingers, so that was something. Lieutenant Dallas, Rourke. That's right. She smiled as she stepped back. No mind reading necessary. I recognize you. Please come in. The apartment, surprisingly spacious. Eve saw it ran the length and width of the restaurant below, reflected a quiet taste in elegance. A collection of crystal balls in a wall case caught the sunlight and seemed attractive rather than occult. I don't read anyone without permission, she said. So discourteous.
You'll have to tell me what I can do for you, but first, please sit. It's coffee you prefer, isn't it? I'd be happy to serve you. We're fine. Eve took a seat in a high-backed chair with curved legs, while Rourke took its twin, and the madam settled on a long, low couch. I've read of your work, both of you, and very much enjoyed Nadine Firth's book on your investigation of the Icoves. It's my sense you don't generally seek the services I provide. We're here on official business. Did you know Darlene Fitzwilliams? Fitzwilliams? Madame Dupre's dark eyes narrowed. Her index finger went to her right temple, pressed. Darlene, why? Last night she stabbed her brother to death, then jumped off his 52nd floor terrace to her own death. Death? Two deaths? Now all four fingers pressed and her color drained. What time? Could you tell me what time they died? Between 8 and 8:30 last night. I've been in meditation. I was disturbed. I felt something dark crowding me. Shortly after 8 last night. Is that so? I dreamed of death. A waking dream. So much blood. Such grief. There was no ignoring such grief, so I went into meditation inside the circle of light. Are you going to tell me you know why Darlene killed her brother and herself? Fitzwilliams? Pain clouded her eyes. I don't... Was she... I'm sorry. Terrible headache. She got to her feet. It came on so quickly. I need to take a blocker. I want to help, but... She was young, wasn't she? Very beautiful and young and in love and sad and... I'm sorry. If you'll excuse me for just a moment. She walked away quickly, turned into a doorway. Meditation? Circle of light. Eve pushed to her feet. She knows something. Your bullshit meter's as tuned as mine. What's your take? The pain was real. Yeah. Frustrated, Eve jammed her hands in her pockets. Yeah, it was. We'll give her a minute. There's something... She avoided a yes or no. Did you know her or not? And she damn well did. People don't go pale and sick over the death of a stranger. Impatient to get back to it, Eve looked around. The place looks normal, quiet and normal. Where's all her trappings? She circled the room, glancing at crystals, candles, then angled to look into a neat kitchen with white cabinets. She's taking too long. Suspicion rose up to twine with impatience. Eve crossed to the doorway, saw the pretty bedroom beyond. Across from it, another doorway opened to a kind of cozy sitting room with dozens of white candles. Circle of light, she thought, and started to step into the bedroom to call again when she heard the sound of breaking glass. She charged in, tried the closed door, found it locked. As Rourke rushed in behind her, Eve kicked the door once, cursed, kicked it a second time. Dupre lay on the white-tiled floor of the bathroom, blood pooling around her from the deep gash in her thigh. "Call for a bus!" Eve shouted. Grabbing towels, she kicked the shards of broken mirror out of her way, crouched down to bind the towels on the wound. "She's bleeding out! Gash the femoral artery! For Christ's sake!" "On their way." Rourke took another towel, wrapped it around the deep gash in Dupre's hand. Dupre's eyes opened, stared into Eve's. "Beware the Mad Hatter." "Who is that? Give me a name." "Lies. All lies. All his words. Even his name. Dark is his truth. Death is his joy. I sent her to him.
I sent her to her death. He'll seek yours now. Beware the Mad Hatter, she repeated, and the eyes staring into Eve's died. Chapter 9.
Having someone die under her hands pissed her off. Having someone die under her hands during a damn interview added a whole new level to pissed. She watched the MTs pronounce Dupre and wished she had something handy to kick into pulp. There was nothing you could have done, Rourke said. I let her walk off, walk out of sight to get a damn blocker.
The pain was real, he reminded her. You'd need to be psychic yourself to have known she intended to kill herself.
Yeah. Eve loosened the fist she'd balled into the pockets. The pain was real, she repeated, and yanked out her link to contact Morris.
I'm sending one in to you.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Self-termination. Broke a mirror, jabbed a shard into her femoral artery.
That would do it.
She had a severe and sudden headache a minute before she did it. It came on during the interview when I asked her about Darlene Fitzwilliams. I think we're dealing with the same thing here. Drugs and mind control. Some sort of post-hypnotic trigger. Look for any similarities with Darlene Fitzwilliams, will you?
I will. Mira might be helpful here, as she's trained in hypnotherapy.
I've talked to her, and will again. Do me a solid. Send the dead wagon.
She gave him the address, signed off, then immediately tagged Peabody to have her and McNabb report to her.
Dupre was a link, Eve said to Rourke. We're going to turn this place inside out. Find out where Dupre sent Darlene Fitzwilliams.
Mad Hatter, my ass.
But you're considering the fact both dead women made reference to Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, yeah. I'll start on the electronics while you consider.
McNabb can handle it. This is going to take longer than the hour or two I asked for.
She died on my watch as well, Eve.
Rourke took her hand briefly.
I'm fully in it now.
Understanding, she started her search in the bedroom. Dupre had a conservative wardrobe. Nothing extravagant, but good fabrics, good quality. The same ran true with jewelry, accessories. Nothing there, shouted mind-reading psychic who talks to dead people.
No sign, Eve noted, anyone else had spent any time there. No sex toys or enhancements, no men's belongings. No women's belongings, she noted, other than what appeared to belong to Dupre. Oddly, in the underwear drawer, like at Darlene's, she found a small notebook. A paper book with a good leather binding. She frowned as she paged through and was still standing there reading when Peabody stepped in.
The morgue's right behind me, she said, and glanced into the bathroom.
That's a lot of blood. Gashing the femoral artery will empty you out pretty fast.
Why kill herself if she drugged Darlene into murder-suicide? Did she try to, you know,
put the whammy on me? No. And I don't think she killed herself because she worked Darlene into killing. I think the same person who did that did this.
But you were right here. Was she high?
Didn't appear to be, and that's troubling, but it fits for me.
What's that?
It's like a diary, but not. Just observations, thoughts, little poems. She mentions bad dreams, headaches, memory blanks, sleepwalking. Like Darlene.
The Mad Hatter and the March Hare hold their tea parties, but the tea is blood. The Dormouse sits in the corner, counting the money.
What's a Dormouse?
I don't know exactly. It's another character in the story, figured.
And here, the last thing she wrote. Day and night, darkness bright. He has the sight and feeds it on their sorrow. Bright and mad, deceiving sad, take what they had and bring them death tomorrow. Eve glanced up. Then she writes, "Why can't I remember?" in all caps, and circles it again and again.
So he used her, probably to solicit rich clients, the Dormouse counting the money, and somehow blocked her memory of it.
Something like that, Eve agreed. But the keys here are he, so it's a man, like Mira predicted, and more, there are three. If we take this literally, Mad Hatter, March Hare, Dormouse, three of them working this.
It's weird to the Mega.
Where do you want me to start? Take the kitchen, Eve told her, as the morgue team did their work. We're going to send samples of any tea, coffee, herbs, hell, pretty much any consumables. And we'll get the sweepers in here, in case there's anything. McNabb, who could have passed for a weird psychic in his sunburst shirt and the hip-swinging vest covered with neon blue stars, came to the doorway, then sidestepped for the morgue team and body bag.
We may have something.
What something? Eve demanded.
We found a memo cube in the room across the hall. A recording. Rourke says it's your Vic's voice. It's weird, like she was in a trance.
Eve nudged by him and went into the room where Rourke stood working his PPC.
Her circle of lights, he said.
Yeah, I saw that. This cube? When he nodded, she picked it up and activated it.
In my circle, the door is closed. Nothing passes through. Safe and quiet mind. Safe and quiet mind.
Too much blood. Too much. What have I done? Help me see. Blue smoke. Blue light. Too many voices. Quiet.
Be still.
Just breathing now. Long, deep. A shuddering breath. And more steady ones.
Blue smoke. Blue light.
See through it. See true. Bright, bright, bright. Not true. A lie. Another lie. I am not weak.
Weeping now, the words thick with tears.
I found my strength after the lies. These are just more. I didn't see. I didn't know. Bright. It hurts to see. It hurts to know. Blood on my hands. So much blood.